which was fighting the secession, clearly didn't agree with that ruling. But when you read it, you see she was very conflicted about what to do with this case, understanding that if she didn't allow them to break off, it could be very soon that Jefferson County would be released from his court order and Gardendale could do whatever it wanted. And by allowing them to break off, she could put them under their own desegregation order and watch them longer. I think it really gets to the challenge of undoing racial caste in this country. It is not easily done.
I want to ask you to stay after the show so we can continue to talk about this and some of the players, and also your own pursuit of a school for your daughter, not in Alabama, but here in New York. Nicole Hannah-Jones is the award-winning reporter for the New York Times Magazine. We'll link to her piece, The Resegregation of Jefferson County. That does it for our show. Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez is in California, Los Angeles. Check our website for his book tour. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
K-Boo. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
You ain't got the do-re-mi. Why, you better go back to beautiful Texas.
Leadbelly, Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, the New Lost City Ramblers, and many other early folk legends recorded for Folkways Records. Fortunately, the entire Folkways archive was obtained by the Smithsonian, and they have been reissuing many of these treasures on their own label. On Friday, September 15th, 12 noon to 1:30, I'll be presenting a special Moving On program featuring recordings on the Smithsonian Folkways label. As a thank you gift for your contribution, there will be a very limited number of the 2-CD anthology album Roll Columbia, a collection of Northwest artists singing Woody Guthrie's Pacific Northwest songs. Tune in Friday, September 15th, 12 noon to 1:30, only on KBOO.
This land was made for you and me.
Have you received your KBOO Silent Drive letter in the mail? Here's your chance to support your favorite community radio station and enter a chance to win some fabulous prizes. No letter? No worries. Go to KBOO.fm to find out more about what you could win when you donate to KBOO between now and September 14th. Here's a teaser. The grand prize is a 3-day, 2-night stay at El Dorado Resort and Casino with airfare in the biggest little city in the world. Yes, that's Reno, Nevada. The first prize is a night out on Burnside with a night at the Jupiter Hotel, with dinner at Le Pigeon, drinks at Cider Riot, and breakfast at Grendel so you can dive deep into the Burnside nightlife. And our second prize will allow you to stock up on medicinal and recreational treats at Jane PDX. Go to kboo.fm to donate. When we come together, we build our community's resilience, and there's no better time to invest in KBOO than now.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, hurricanes, earthquakes, wildfires, need we say more?
Portland's air is getting less smoky, but will it last? Enjoy it while it's clear here.
And what's in your water? Fire retardants?
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 8th, 2017. I'm Ruben Lawrence.
And I'm Zalice Marchand. Many people throughout Portland have been concerned about their drinking water that comes from Bull Run because of the Eagle Creek fire that is burning near the watershed. The Forestry Service may need to use fire retardant in the event that the east winds begin blowing. The Portland Water Bureau has authorized the use of fire retardant to prevent fire from overcoming the watershed, and yet counters it with saying, quote, "We do not have a direct firefighting role and we have no authorization to okay a retardant drop in Bull Run," end quote. On Monday, the U.S. Forest Service notified the Portland Water Bureau that if they have to, they will use fire retardant, but only under the terms of the Fire Protection Plan and under specific circumstances. As of now, the retardant has not been used at all. Oregon State Fire Marshal and Portland Fire and Rescue Representative Lieutenant Damon Simmons said, quote, "Number one on the list of avoidance areas is watersheds. Retardant is not dropped on watersheds unless there is an imminent threat to life," end quote. The Water Bureau also stated in their release that in the unlikely event that any retardant enters the water supply, the likely impact it would have is an increase in the water's nutrient load and a possible increase in algae production.
The Oregonian reports that state health regulators have lifted a toxic algae health advisory for Lake Billy Chinook, the reservoir in central Oregon. Water monitoring has confirmed that the level of blue-green algae and toxins they produce has fallen back to safe levels for both people and dogs. The Oregon Health Authority issued a health advisory July 17th for the southern end of the lake at Perry South Cove. Lake Billy Chinook is about 12 miles west of Madras. It's popular with houseboaters, water skiers, and fishermen. The state cautions that only a fraction of the many lakes and waterways in Oregon are monitored for blue-green algae. People, and especially small children and pets, should avoid areas where the water is foamy, scummy, thick like paint, pea green, blue-green, or brownish-red, or if a thick mat of blue-green algae is visible in the water. Contaminated water can cause skin rashes. Swallowing it can cause nausea and other symptoms. For health information, to report human or pet illnesses due to blooms, or to ask questions, you can contact the Oregon Health Authority.
As of today, 82 wildfires are burning in the United States, involving nearly 1.5 million acres in 9 states in the West, including Oregon. The Associated Press calculates that so far this year, more than 8 million acres have burned. According to the National Interagency Fire Agency, one fire at the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest in Oregon has burned more than 175,000 acres and is only 5% contained as of today. Also from the agency, they claim drought and extreme heat waves have contributed to this year's forest fires.
After days of ash falling from the skies, Portland air quality has improved to good status, and it should stay that way for the weekend. The smoke that's been covering Portland came mostly from the Eagle Creek fire burning in the Columbia River Gorge. But watch out on Monday. That's when high temperatures will reach near 90 degrees, combined with shifting winds, and that could bring wildfire smoke back into our area. This is the second time this summer the Rose City has coped with wildfire smoke. In August, smoke from wildfires in British Columbia blew south into the region.
Today, the Portland Police announced they will stop documenting people as gang members starting on October 15th of this year. This comes after concerns about racial stereotyping in connection with the 20-year-old gang designation policy. Police say they started it at the time as an investigative tool to help decrease gun violence. But a statement the police released today noted that times have changed. They say in meeting about the issue with members of the community, police started to realize that labeling a person as a, quote, gang member, end quote, can harm their efforts to overcome challenges among those who need the help most. The names of 300 people on the list will be purged from the database in October.
Portland police are alerting people of multiple demonstrations planned for this Sunday afternoon in downtown Portland. Officers say events are expected near the Salmon Creek Springs, Salmon Street Springs and Waterfront Park, Pioneer Square, and Terry Schrunk Plaza. Portland Stands United Against Hate has been issued a permit for a street march. Police say unpermitted marchers should stay on sidewalks and obey traffic laws. They plan to have a significant law enforcement presence due to past threats and acts of violence between different groups, both locally and nationally. If you are attending a demonstration, police say you should not bring firearms, knives, or other weapons, or items that can be used as weapons, like sticks, bats, poles, or fireworks. They say they will seize the prohibited items, and people who carry them could face criminal charges.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture from the Sovereign Nation.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Yurok tribe in Northern California has declared a state of emergency due to wildfire smoke. In a statement, Yurok Tribal Chairman Thomas P. O'Rourke said the tribe's emergency response team is working with Humboldt County and outside agencies to help the community cope with prolonged poor air quality. The tribe has been passing out masks, checking on vulnerable residents, and operating a clean air shelter for weeks now. The massive amount of smoke comes from two wildfire complexes burning more than 100,000 acres just east of the reservation. A group who call themselves the Mittawakaden Sioux Indians of Minnesota says it'll go ahead with efforts to secure federal recognition despite a judge's ruling last week. U.S. District Court Judge Rudolph Contreras dismissed the group's case, telling them they need to go through the Interior Department's administrative process to seek tribal recognition. It's the latest legal effort by some individuals to distinguish themselves from three other Dakota communities. Their claims go back to the Dakota War of 1862, when the United States government forced expelled all Dakota people from Minnesota, except some 200 Mittawakaden. Eric Cardall is the longtime attorney for the plaintiffs.
It was recognized that the friendly Dakota, which were called Mittawakaden, Minnesota Mittawakaden, would be allowed to stay in Minnesota, and they then formed a tribe. And lands were provided for them under various acts.
Cardall says thousands of people today identify as lineal descendants and that they're entitled to 12 square miles of land once promised to them by Congress. But officials from other federally recognized Dakota communities in the state have condemned Cardall and his client's claims.
To be clear, there is no such entity as the Mittawakaden Sioux Indians of Minnesota. They're a group of individuals who have given themselves that name.
Joseph Halloran is with the Jacobson Law Group and is counsel to the Lower Sioux and Prairie Island Indian communities.
This most recent dismissal is the continuation of what is really a nefarious dozen-year attack on the federally recognized Dakota communities in Minnesota.
Halloran notes that most of Cardall's plaintiffs over the years have been enrolled members in one of those communities. The removal of a dam in upstate New York is giving the St. Regis Mohawk tribe a chance to reclaim their land and celebrate their culture. Great Lakes Today reporter Veronica Volk has more.
Standing on the site of the old Hogansburg Dam, Gail McDonald recalls playing in the St. Regis River.
I know when I was young, many years ago, we used to swim here. Even though the dam was functioning at that time, we used to swim here, dangerous as it was.
It wasn't just dangerous for people. The 12-foot-high concrete barrier also disrupted the migration of sturgeon and salmon. But last year, the dam was taken down, and now the river runs uninterrupted through the St. Regis Mohawk Reservation. The tribe's environmental division is looking to reintroduce native fish so they can bring back traditions like fishing and trapping. McDonald is also trying to figure out what to do with the dam's old stone face building. She's working with the tribe to create an art park along the river, part gallery to showcase local paintings, part performance space for ceremonies, maybe even a cafe that serves local foods, not just for the community, but for visitors to the reservation.
It's not only just the artistic part of it, but the tourism is also sharing our knowledge and sharing who we are as a people in a very positive way.
The project's still in the planning stages. McDonald says they're trying to shore up funding. But people have already begun using the water again. Just across the river, two men wade into the water knee-deep with fishing poles and bait buckets. For National Native News, I'm Veronica Volk on the St. Regis Mohawk Reservation.
And I'm Hannah Colton.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Native America Calling. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, we're looking at a cloudy night, chilling down to 59 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds continue up to 74 degrees and a 20% chance of rain. Today in history, Michelangelo's 13-foot marble statue of David was unveiled in Florence, Italy in 1504. The quote of the day is from Michelangelo, who said, "Genius is eternal patience."
Oh,
Irma is the most powerful Atlantic hurricane on record. Forecasters expect it to bring dangerous storm surges and winds. It's on track to hit Miami, although its exact path still is not clear. As of this afternoon, Hurricane Irma had maximum winds of 155 miles per hour and was about 380 miles southeast of Miami. The hurricane raked through the Caribbean this week, killing at least a dozen people. Forecasters expect it to make landfall in Florida on Sunday morning. Utility managers predict as many as 9 million Floridians could be without power after Irma strikes. They are taking drastic measures before the storm, including shuttering both of the state's working nuclear plants. Florida Power and Light, the nation's third largest electric utility, warned today that Irma, as a Category 4 hurricane, could cut power for weeks. The utility's president and CEO, Eric Szilagyi, said today, quote, "We are looking at outages that are probably going to impact about 9 million people. That would be unprecedented for us," end quote.
Irma has already devastated Barbuda and Antigua, but now there are two more hurricanes following close behind. These new storms have already reached hurricane status a few days ago, named Jose and Katia. This new duo of hurricanes is expected to follow a similar path to Irma, at least initially. Jose is following closely with Irma now, and it might hit the already ravaged Caribbean, but it's still possible that it might nearly miss Barbuda and Antigua. Despite this, there is already another hurricane watch announced for them both. CNN reported that Jose is now a Category 3 storm and is out over the Atlantic where Irma was a few days ago. Katia has turned southwest and is now intensifying in the Gulf of Mexico, expected to make landfall somewhere in Veracruz either tonight or sometime tomorrow. While Jose is out in the Atlantic standing at Category 3, Katia stays as a Category 2 or 3 storm. With Irma, Jose, and Katia together, this can be a dangerous time for the Gulf and East Coast.
And now we hear a report on climate change from Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the wake of devastating storms like Sandy and Katrina, it's getting much more expensive to insure homes in flood zones.
If you do not make your home more flood resistant, your flood insurance premiums are going up, sometimes drastically.
That's Michael Vernon. He lives near Norfolk, Virginia. He says the rising cost of insurance there can make homes nearly impossible to sell.
When you go through certain areas that are flood prone and you see green moss around the bottom of the house and you can see that it's vacant and there's a bank sign in the yard, you know it was another sad story.
In response to rising insurance prices, some residents are making modifications to their homes. Vernon owns a company that helps them do that. For many, this means relocating furnaces and water heaters or adding new types of drainage. A few homes require more drastic changes.
So, for example, if a house has a basement, the only way to mitigate is to get rid of the basement.
Many people may resist the idea of filling in their basement with sand or gravel. But when the alternatives are skyrocketing premiums or a house that won't sell, Vernon says people often do what it takes to survive in a flood zone. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
A very powerful earthquake hit the southern coast of Mexico last night, killing at least 38 people. This magnitude 8.1 earthquake, the epicenter of which was roughly 74 miles off the coast of Mexico, was felt as far as Mexico City and Guatemala City, also causing a roughly 2-foot tsunami. More tsunamis may occur due to possible aftershocks. President Enrique Peña Nieto said that this quake was felt by nearly 50 million people across the country and was the strongest earthquake that Mexico has experienced in nearly 100 years. The states of Chiapas and Oaxaca, which are home to nearly 9 million people, were closest to the epicenter of the quake. These two regions are among the most impoverished areas in Mexico, which means they were likely hit the hardest. About 1.85 million homes lost electricity, but 74% of them have recently had service returned, according to Peña Nieto. However, some people still lack water, and it can take 36 to 48 hours to get it back up. A lot of people are still very likely to be trapped under rubble, and rescue teams continue trying to get them out.
Irma devastated much of the Caribbean and South Florida, could suffer similar destruction from the storm. The Houston area is just beginning a recovery from Hurricane Harvey, which could last years. Meantime, President Trump's budget could cut deep into the agencies that protect people from such disasters. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Weather Service are responsible for predicting weather events like hurricanes using satellites, sensors, and other technology. The Sierra Club's Jeff Tittle argued this week that Trump's budget, quote, actually shows contempt for people dealing with natural disasters and climate impacts, end quote. By denying climate change, Tittle goes on, Trump is denying our future. What he's doing is slashing the budget as part of his attack and the environment and the people of the United States. But with Trump proposing a 17% cut to NOAA's budget, weather scientists worry they won't be able to provide residents with trustworthy forecasts. According to The Verge, the proposed cuts would, quote, directly hurt the Northwest's ability to improve its forecasting system, keeping the U.S. behind European and other countries when it comes to predicting strong storms, end quote. Meanwhile, the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, could lose a third of its funding under Trump's budget. Under the leadership of Trump appointee Scott Pruitt, who, like the president, denies a link between human activity and climate change, the EPA has cut 400 workers, urging them to take buyouts or retire early. Democratic lawmakers have criticized the buyouts, especially in light of the destruction in Houston. Long-term recovery from disasters like Harvey and Irma could suffer under Trump as well. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, said today it's about to run out of money. Trump's budget could cut FEMA's funding by $667 million. Florida lawmakers warn that the $7.85 billion aid package, which House and Senate approved for Harvey victims, would not cover those affected by Irma.
Now that Congress has returned from August recess, lawmakers are in discussions about a legislative response to thwart President Trump's ban on transgender military service, according to Capitol Hill sources and LGBT advocates who spoke anonymously to the Washington Blade. Senators could take action as soon as next week when they begin debate on the 2018 Defense Authorization Bill, which could be used to override Trump's order to the Pentagon to ban transgender people from the armed forces. The Washington Post reports Senators Kirsten Gillibrand of New York and Susan Collins of Maine, who championed efforts in 2010 for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, are planning an amendment to the Defense Authorization Bill targeting the transgender ban. The plan in the Senate could work despite Republican control. If Collins and the entire Democratic caucus support the measure, 11 more Republicans would be needed to get the 60-vote threshold to overcome a likely filibuster. Republicans who objected to Trump's transgender military ban could be candidates such as Senators John McCain of Arizona, Orrin Hatch of Utah, or Joni Ernst of Iowa. But one LGBT advocate said even a vote that falls short of the 60-vote requirement would still be helpful from a political standpoint if at least a majority of senators were on the record opposing Trump's transgender military policy.
Portland has issued a traffic advisory about railroad track replacement that could impact your drive. Street improvements and railroad track replacement will require the closure of North Columbia Boulevard between North Fisk Avenue and North Chautauqua Boulevard on Tuesday, September 12th through Friday, September 15th, all hours and all days. Drivers are to be advised.
You might call it a legal vodka punch-out. The Oregon maker of a growing line of fruit-flavored vodkas wants a former distilling partner to stop using what it says is a proprietary formula in a competing product. The Portland Business Journal reports that Northwest Natural Spirits, LLC, which makes Wild Roots natural fruit-flavored vodkas, filed an arbitration demand with the Arbitration Service of Portland. The company is accusing Bend Distillery Incorporated of, quote, misappropriating key aspects, end quote, of its Wild Roots infusing formula.
And now the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. Airport workers in Chicago have scored a victory this week, a big win as the Chicago City Council unanimously voted to raise wages for about 8,000 O'Hare and Midway workers. Airline contractors and subcontractors will have to pay workers no less than $13.45 an hour starting July 1st of 2018. Cost of living raises will have to automatically be paid annually after that. The Chicago ordinance also requires airlines to have labor peace agreements not to interfere with union organizing drives. SEIU Local 1 says it's a major win for workers and a step forward in their fight for 15 and a union. It took 2 years of hard work, organizing, and protesting to get this victory for airport workers in Chicago. The AFL-CIO's Celeste Drake says NAFTA renegotiations aren't going well to create a better deal for workers. Drake says the problem, from a worker's perspective, is the core purpose of these trade agreements in the first place.
They all really focus on rights for global corporations. So the highest and best interest, according to a trade agreement, is not worker safety or rising wages or addressing climate change or protection of the environment or product safety for consumers or anything. It's, can companies sell what they want to sell in the manner they want to make it, even if that's dangerous or exploiting wages?
Drake says in some important areas, the U.S. hasn't yet made proposals, including on labor and tax dodging by corporations. Drake, the AFL-CIO's trade and globalization policy specialist, says that's why workers need to change the fundamental core mission of trade agreements to uphold the rights of workers.
So we want to change all the rules so it says, no, 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 these rules are about raising standards of living. These rules are about lifting families up and helping them work out of poverty into the middle class.
Labor stood up for DACA Dreamers in a rally in March in Washington, D.C. this week. The Labor Council for Latin American Advancement joined AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka and UFCW Secretary-Treasurer Esther Lopez to fight back against Trump's termination of the DACA program. Labor says it will harm not just the DACA Dreamers and their families, but will also cause financial harm to the U.S. economy and the entire workforce. 15 state attorneys general and Washington, D.C. filed suit against the DACA termination Wednesday.
Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Live nationwide weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
WIN is brought to you in part by the Amalgamated Transit Union, the largest labor union representing transit and allied workers in the U.S. and Canada. Online at atu.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced driven newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Isabel Cronkren and Annette Newell. Special thanks to Native Voice One. The producer is Annette Newell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is myself, Zella Zellis-Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News and on Instagram at the KBOO Evening News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Zellis Marchant.
And I'm Ruben Lawrence. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the great issues of our time and goes where corporate media fears to tread. At 10 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to Hood River City Council member Pete Cornelison about the impact of the Eagle Creek fire on the people and the landscape of the Columbia River Gorge. At 11, it's Health Watch, information to make you healthier. And at 11:30, On the Ground Radio hears from anti-fascist activists, plus Gerald Horn speaks out on Harvey and the Confederacy. KBOO keeps you informed and involved, and we need your help. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. Thank you for listening. Good night, Zellos.
Good night, Ruben. Good night, Jenna.
Good night. night. KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, one would hope that all of those who side-eyed Donald Trump's assertion back in January that recipients of the immigration program DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, quote, shouldn't be very worried. I do have a big heart, close quote, would greet with equal incredulity the administration's line, as they terminated the program, that they did so after carefully evaluating its constitutionality and determining it conflicted with existing immigration laws. But while plenty of coverage is skeptical of Trump, are media really understanding what the program does and doesn't mean for recipients? Tina Vasquez is immigration reporter for Rewire. We'll talk with her about DACA. Also on the show, as we record, Hurricane Irma has battered the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico and is currently coming down on the Dominican Republic and Haiti. This while Texas continues to reel from Harvey. Both hurricanes